I'm on the road to recovery, step by step.
I think it is about that time. Hello. All right, everyone. Welcome to Fort Lauderdale, Primary Purpose, Big Book Study, Thursday night, Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. Let's get this meeting started off with a joke, yeah? Ryan?
Alcoholic?
Hi, Ryan.
So this is like, I did a girl power joke for Marion. Mike Chase told me to. What's the difference between pigs and men?
What, Ryan?
Pigs don't turn into men when they drink.
Thank you, Ryan. And thank you all for joining us tonight. In just a minute, we're going to start our 2-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise and that might distract others. Take this time to get connected to God, let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused on this step study tonight. Everyone ready? Start the meditation.
Thank you.
all join me in the Foglight Prayer. If you don't know it by heart, it is on the bulletin or should be on a chair in front of you. God. Amen. From There Is a Solution, from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. Tonight I have asked my darling new friend Nathan to come up and read this spiritual experience. We read this notice because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is. For Nathan.
Hi, my name is Nathan, an addict.
Hi, Nathan.
Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon carefully reading shows that the personal change significant to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experience must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden, voluntarily changes are described. Through it was not our intention to create such an impression. Many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change and feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations through frequent are by no means the rule. Most of our experience are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because the developed slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the different long before him is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, the members find that they have tapped an unexpected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God's consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that an alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only defeat by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We found that no one need have difficulty with the spiritual of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Whoops. Thank you, Nathan. You did a really good job. I told you it was short, huh? If you could all please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. There's also a tech-free meeting, so just set your phones to airplane or just turn them off. Now, it is my pleasure and privilege to introduce our speaker. She never fails to make me laugh and give me some hope, so without further ado, for her fourth session tonight, Miss Marion.
Hi, friends. I'm Marion. I'm a recovered alcoholic. It's good to be here and good to be sober. And welcome to the newcomers and people that haven't been here before. Welcome. And thanks for coming back if you've been here. So that makes me feel like I haven't totally schlepped this up too much. My sobriety date is November 11th, 1989. This is my home group. My sponsor is Polly P. And I'm grateful to be here today. So we're in our fourth session, which means we're going to go into inventory. We're going to go into stuff like that. But just to set things up, if you're new to the room, what we have been doing is my personal journey, my personal stories of working knowledge of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this just happens to be four, and we'll see where God takes us. It was interesting when I walked in, and you know, here it's on. I was telling Peter this is my big joke for tonight, or for starters. Someone stepped on my foot. Somebody stepped on my toes, and I didn't even retaliate. And if you get that joke, that means you have a working knowledge of the big book. Okay, so let's laugh louder. Ha, 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 right? Okay. So that's, you know, that's just us as alcoholics, our reaction to life, how I react to life, how in my selfishness and my self-centeredness and the things in my life that have driven me, my ways I play God in my life, the ways I, you know, if you just do it my way, everything will be okay, you know. And I'm just so grateful today that I have this loving God. I was like, I don't know what I was listening to this week, but someone was saying, you know, when we're around here a little while, we say a prayer in the morning and get on with our day. And when we're around here a long time, it seems like, I mean, I don't know, for me, it's just this constant conversation. I mean, I feel like today I need the program of Alcoholics Anonymous more than I ever have. And years and years, it's not like the thought of the drink can keep me from, oh, think back to November 11th, 1989, and that's going to keep me sober today. Although I can still, and it's so weird, I don't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday morning, but I can remember the morning of November 11th, 1989, you know, and it's just, so those things, you know, they're there and the memories are there, but that isn't where the safety and where that defense is going to come from. It's not going to come from the pain and the agony of that last day. If that defense is going to come from this relationship with this loving God, not condemning God, not if you just measure up, you know, if you just do what you should be doing instead of what you are doing, you know, as I grow and I grow in this relationship with God and as I fall short in it, it's like the more and more I come to realize is that I'm loved and I'm accepted and I'm just, if we can ever grasp the immensity and the forgiveness and the ridiculous grace that's in our life. I don't even remember what that word was we used that this week, but you know, that it's just ridiculous how much God loves us. You know, he just loves us. He just sees you and you wake up in the morning and he just goes, oh, yay, there's Peter. Can't wait to use him today. You know, I mean, that's just the way God is. And it's so funny. I feel like that's always a call on my life, you know, to help a drunk, to help you see yourself, how God sees you. But it happens to be a struggle that I have. They always say that stuff, you know, if you're a roofer, go look at a roofer's roof. Or, you know, go if you're a carpenter, go look at his house or whatever it is, you know. And so I just know that. I mean, I know it here, and sometimes it makes it here. And when it does, man, it's beautiful. There's nothing that feels that good as just knowing God loves me, that God loves us all. What? You know, and it doesn't have anything to do with earning it or deserving it, or, you know, now I work step three, so God must love me more, or I worked with four more drunks today and God must love me more. No, it just is. You know, and wow, you know, that we get to live this life of a do-over. We get to live this life of, you know, these little ragamuffins out there screwing things up, and then we get to have a do-over and do something a little bit different. That we get to, you know, live this life and help put somebody else's hand in God's hand and be able to say, you know, if God can forgive me and if God can give me that grace and if God can give me that mercy, he can certainly do it for you. What a gift. What a gift. And, you know, 29 years later, standing up here every single time, my knees shake, they buckle. It's like, God, you know, you better show up or we're screwed, you know? and I just love that about God. And so it doesn't have to do with or race. It doesn't have to do with the creed. It doesn't have to do with the religion. It doesn't have to do with coulda, shoulda, wouldas. It doesn't have anything to do with that. It's just his amazing mercy and his amazing grace. And so I'm grateful to some days be okay and touching that stuff in my life. You know, being able to walk that out. And so that's beautiful. And if you don't have that and you're in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, that is possible. And the only thing that it requires is everything. The only thing it requires is to be absolutely have your life 100% turned around. That it's not about me. It's not about what I get. It's everything about what I give for fun and for free, like my sponsor talks about, you know, for fun and for free. And sometimes it's tedious and sometimes it's hard and sometimes it's, I just want to sit in my stuff and I want to sit in my self-centeredness and I want to sit in resentment and I want to sit in fear and I want to sit in those places. But, you know, I mean, the old timers used to say this, it's like a baby with a dirty diaper. At first it's warm and it's kind of comfortable, but then after a while that doo-doo gets a little cold. It starts sagging. You've seen him, Robin. Happens with the baby, right? It's sagging, it smells, it's cold, and it's time to get that thing off. And, you know, when all these ways we play God and all these ways, you know, and the deal is we can't do it on our own. You know, solitary self-appraisal seldom suffices, you know. Boom, the story of my life, you know, it's like my perspective, the way I look at things, the things I get offended about, and when I can let somebody else in the mess in my head, in this place, I can get a different view. And I have to have a different view. If you're a drunk like me, I got to have a different view. I mean, I sat at a diner with Peter last night and I had this little resentment cooking, and it was so, and it's usually, you guys, it's so ridiculous in our own thing, the way this plays out in our mind, this magnificent magnifying mind, this place that centers all the doubt, all the fear, all the resentment, all that stuff, the place where that centers, when I just let you in. When I just let someone else in. And it was so cool. It was this little thing over dinner. I was talking about this little situation in my life. And, you know, Peter uses, it's like, hey, you know, do you mind talking me through this a minute? You know, and it was just kind of a sweet thing. But And this is step four stuff, but it, you know, I'll talk about that in a bit. But the sentence starts with perhaps, you know, did you think of looking at this way? And yeah, that is step 10 and all that stuff. But the reality is my book says that I have to be free of anger. I have to be free of anger. That is the dubious luxury of normal men. That it's my number one offender. And from it stem all forms of spiritual disease. So when I disconnect from reality is when I disconnect from you first, then I'm disconnecting from God. When I have a disconnection from any of you, any of God's children, anyone, then that blocks for us, the sunlight of the Spirit. I know what it's like to have the sunlight of the Spirit. I know what it feels like to walk with God. I know what that feels like. And I somehow, and I still can't take the credit, I asked the question. That little thing was resolved super easy. Well, did you think of looking at it this way? And so the analogy it gives us when we come into doing our inventory in step four is it talks about, you know, I'm going to read a little bit of this because God gave me this little idea to use. So therefore, we started on a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. It's an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged and unsaleable goods to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about the values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup, which caused our failure. And being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations. So stay with me on this story. So here's my story. I'm driving to work today, and I'm thinking about tonight. And so in this business that Peter and I run, we got some property, and there's a couple houses there. And when we first viewed the property, we came in the front door, and there's a Christmas tree, and it was August, in the front lobby. And the walls were yellow and they were drippy and there were big thick curtains and you couldn't see the daylight of Florida in there. And so much, I was thinking about this today, is when we came into this place, it was like we had a vision. We had this idea of what God would do in this place to help bring people to God and all this stuff. And with that came, you know, there was the people that were there had left a lot of stuff. There was a lot of garbage. There were some things that were salvageable. And what we were doing through that process as we were cleaning was we were pulling things aside that we thought had value, that we thought that we'd be able to use. And there were dump trucks after dump trucks going out the door, and the brown curtains, thick curtains came off the windows, and it was a laborious and it was a tedious effort to build this place. But so much, and that was just in my heart today, I was thinking about that process. And when we were going through all that, it's so much like what we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous, when we're writing this inventory, when we're taking a stock in trade, when we're getting, you know, resentments are flying out and we're all these things. Does that make any sense to you guys? A little bit? Okay. So anyway, you know, the end result in all of it is that we were able to take these things. See, so this business is taking an inventory and this business is, you know, taking the things off the shelf that are past pool date, and we're pulling things off from the pool date, you know, and we're using these beautiful things that were left, and we're hanging them on walls, and there's extra candles, and there's all these beautiful things. And it's so much of what happens in our process with 4, 5, and 6. It's like, you know, some of those character defects we'll find in step 6, you know, can end up being assets in the hands of God, and they can end up being garbage in our hands. You know, the things that we think are saleable, the things that we think are okay, but when, or not okay, or good, you know, when it, I'm kind of going into 7 here a little bit, but you know, it's like, I'm ready to, you know, I'm willing to have God have all of me, good and bad. Okay. So that's what this is about. You know, I come to God, and I'm surrendering my life in step 3. I'm surrendering my life to God. And next it says we set off on a rigorous course of action. A rigorous course of action for this house cleaning, for this place. And why? In our book it says earlier that we're willing to go to any length. Why? The first page of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, what it says, or how it says, is just to build that relationship with God. But where in my selfishness and where in my self-centeredness am I blocking off that view? Am I blocking off this view with God that where my life, you know, this life that I have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition? Okay, you know, it says that we, you know, with the desperation of a drowning man or the desperation of a drowning woman. And anytime I'm in the way of you or anytime I'm in the way of God, I still am in danger of taking a drink. I'm still in danger of taking a drink. When I first got sober, I was, I'm going to take a drink. I went to this treatment center in 1989, and I think they were first introducing some kind of step programs there. And I think I've told you guys a little bit about that, you know, I had to go through step 1 and step 2 and step 3 in treatment. And when I had done step 3, I had the opportunity to, I earned the right to go to a meeting. I probably said this story before, but I'm saying it again. And I earned this right to go to Dry Dock in Bellingham and on a Friday night. And I went in and one more time, my mind was telling me it was Friday night. And the floors were like this, and the trains were going by, and the room was full of smoke. And my mind was telling me that I'd overreacted again, and why am I here? And this is what my life has come to. I'm at an AA meeting on a Friday night, and what a loser I am. And my mind was trying to take me out again. And through that process, I got a sponsor. There was a woman in that room that night, and she was sitting up against the wall, and she was a beautiful Native American woman, and she told my story. And she said it out loud. And that's, you know, the power of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is our stories, is my experience. And this woman that I'd never met and I'd never seen before kept me in the room that night. And that might not be a big deal to you, but that's a big deal to me. That's a big deal to me that God in his infinite mercy and in his grace would send. That woman was there for me. I don't know if she was there for anybody else, but it kept me in the room that night. It kept me in the room. You know, I come in, you know, I come out of treatment. I told you I had this little girl at the grocery store that had 6 months, and I thought she was God, and you know, I meet Kathy Downs at a meeting, and Kathy's like, where are you in this? You know, I told you that, I think I told you this, maybe not, whatever. She says to me one day, she goes, it was a Friday noon meeting, I'll never forget it, and she said, Marion, what are you doing this weekend? And I gave her this like long laundry list of everything that I was doing. I'm taking the kids to the park, and I'm trying to make up for being out of my kids' life, for them getting their own, you know, I'm going to make up for that now. And I'm telling her, give her this long list of everything that I was doing. And she tells me, one of these days, you're going to let God be in control of your life. Thank you, dear. And through that process, so I'd done those first three steps, but I sat down and did another one with her, you know, let's do this. And she put me into the work on step four and all my inventory. And in this fact-finding mission, like, I was a girl, like, my first time through this work, I had this notebook, and I have a husband at home, he's drinking, and I'm carrying this notebook around everywhere I went. She said, write everything that on there that you've never told anybody in your whole entire life. And so that's what I was busy doing. And from it came this stuff. Resentment, the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we've not only been mentally and physically ill, we've been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, or our personal relations, including sex, were hurt or threatened, so we were sore, we were burnt up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. You know, my injuries, my list, the laundry list of the people that I was mad at, right? And here's the deal, like, our book talks about, you know, we have the varied traits, you know, that I was kind and loving and caring, but on the other hand, I have all this stuff inside of me, you know, that's just boiling up, like the mean, egotistical poo-poo that I was, right? So I had these varied traits, and I didn't even know it, and I was ticked off, because I was like, how does this book know this about me? Like, I was always the person, this is my life, and my crazy alcoholic family, which is pretty amazing. At the same time, we are like, we get into untreated alcoholism in my family. It's kind of a place we go. But my little sister has 30 years of sobriety. I have 29 years of sobriety. My little brother Eric has 28 years of sobriety. My sister Marlene has 27 years of sobriety. And I don't know, take that one to the casino. I mean, what are the odds of that stuff, right? Out of six, there's four of us, right? But here's the deal. This is what I was doing. Marrying the peacekeeper, marrying the people pleaser. You know, my sponsor always says, yeah, just line those people up and see how many you're really pleasing, marrying, you know. But it ain't many, you know. But this was my life. I lost my son. I have three little kids. I have this house with the nice little driveway. We had a sandbox. We had a treehouse. And I'm working a job, and on the outside, everything, on the outside, it looked really nice. And on the inside, I was dead. And what I would do with my life, like, I was, our book talks about the actor trying to direct the show. When I first saw that page, I wanted to take this book and burn it in 100 pieces. You know, I did. It was like, how does this book know I'm directing the show? Because this is my job. You know, it was like, my brother Eric would, like, he's obviously got a problem. You know, he lives under a bridge or an abandoned car. He's hawking stereos. He's knocking at my door in the middle of the night. I mean, hello, Eric's a drunk. You know, my little sister's, you know, she's having wine for breakfast and pills to pop it down. And, well, hello, you know. And my big sister, my gosh, if she had any more ganja in her life, that would be weed for you people that don't know. You know, and that was my life. I was like, okay, mom, and I did it. I did it since I was a little girl. It was like my life was that, you know. Mom and dad got in fights downstairs in their alcoholism, and they didn't send my big brother down there for the fights. They didn't send any of my brothers down there for the fights. They'd send me down. Get down there and break it up, you know. And why would I need a God in my life? It'd be like, oh, dad, I'll sing you a song. I'll dance for mom. Aren't I cute? You know, put on the cute little face, hootie face, Marion face. And that was my nickname. My dad gave it to me. Don't use it against me. And you know, and I could control my environment, you know. It was like I was so busy telling them how to live. Telling them, you know, okay, mom do this, dad do that. Brothers and, you know, big sister, you got a problem with that green stuff. Little sister, you know, maybe lay off the pills a little bit. Little brother, you know, you got a spike in your arm. I mean, all that stuff. And I was so busy looking out here at other people and trying to control my environment around me. And it's still, you know, to this day, that those traits of mine, that trait of mine, like, it's huge. In your, you know, Joyce Meyer, she's like a amazing lady. And she talks about, you know, I no longer am playing the role that my family's assigned me. And that role in my life as a little girl carried over to many situations in my life, and even still to this day, I can go, oh, you got to do this my way. And I can do it with you. And I have a job where I get to like oversee people. So being able to step in, and it gets messy sometimes. It was a couch day today. Wow. And how I can throw my will into situations and areas I can play God. Even this silly little resentment I had earlier this week was a way of, you know, I was supposed to speak and then April spoke and it was supposed to be me. And now next week I'm not speaking and I was ticked off about that. And it's like, oh, where did you try to play God? Whoa. You know, always, that's me. And it's the way I'm going to control it, the way I'm going to feel about it, why you must be thinking this of me. And it's all about me. And the reality is, guys, these are the things that we get to walk with the rest of our life. And if you're brand new to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and you think it's about alcohol, sorry. It's, you know, like, she's got 29 years. I don't know if I want what she's got. No. Hopefully so. Work in progress. We're always a work in progress. So when I was able to look at that stuff, when I could see the ways I was playing God, when I could see where I was resentful, where I was burnt up, where I thought, I'm just sweet and nice little Marion in my head, but inside I was like scheming and people not doing the things that I wanted them to do. You know, and the deal is I can live a life and be restless and irritable and discontent all I want. Or I can live a life of being happy, joyous, and free. See, when I take myself out of the director's chair, when I take myself out of that place and I allow God to do his job, like really it's my job to allow God to do what he wants to do anyway. How arrogant is that in the first place? So the anything in me that as I started to write this list, as I started writing those resentments, as I started the second column and I'm just like, yeah, that SO somebody, oh my God, that person and oh this and heck yeah, I'm writing this inventory. Let's go. You know, let's go. Let's get this happening. You know, but the deal is when I'm able to look at those areas of my life that are offended, you know, in our third column, when it talks about areas of myself, those areas of my life that are affected, and these are the things we walk around with. I walk around with in my alcoholism all day, every day without God. Yes, I know this is step four, but these are the places in my life. You know, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. I don't even know where I heard this, but like, it's our go-to place. Our go-to place is you hurt my pride. You hurt my self-esteem. You hurt my security. You hurt my pocketbook. You hurt those places. And I'm like this. I'm out. I'm ready to go on that. You know, and here's the deal. I mean, that's my go-to as an alcoholic today. So as I continue to do this work, you know, I can take care of stuff in 10, 11, and 12, and I can write my personal inventory and I can do that. But there's stuff, you know, Peter talks about those things that hook you and going back through the work again and and looking at these places and looking at these harms, looking at resentments and looking at my fears and looking at my sex inventory, you know, and looking at those things. But sometimes some of that stuff just hooks you. Some of that stuff just hooks you. And years after being through this process, I can go through it again and I can see things that it's like Peter says this, or Mike, even this, last time I went through this process, I did it with Mike Chase and able to, and looking at the harms that I'd caused in my life, the harms that I caused in sobriety in my life, and being able to look at that where it wasn't, there wasn't a resentment attached. There wasn't a fear attached. There wasn't, you know, it had nothing to do with my sex inventory, but able to look at the harms that I caused. It had nothing to do with my finances. Okay, I'm drinking again. It drove me to drink water. And then when I drink water, I get to breathe and slow down for a second. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to our future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We couldn't wish them away any more than alcohol. Have you guys ever done that in your sobriety where you go, you have a resentment, it hangs on, and you wish it away, but then it's like, oh my God, there's that person. Oh, still mad at them. That one still stings. You know what I mean? This was our course. We realized this I love so much, our sick man's prayer. This was our course. Okay, so I had the opportunity at... the gut-wrenching opportunity at 15 years sober through the process of the steps again. And and it was a really, really, really broken time in my life. And I talked a little bit about this last week where, you know, I was married to someone who was a very sick man, a very, very sick man. And through this, what I did find out in the inventory, I was playing God too, because I felt like if I stayed and if I prayed, I could help change him, which is always my deal. It's like, oh, I stay in your life and I'm going to pray for you and you're going to change. Yes, whatever, pride. And I was so broken, and I had, I had a restraining order, and there was a lot of, it was an abusive situation. And I say this because it was a long time in AA. I never talked about it from the podium. And I know today when I've said this stuff that there's women and men in the room that can relate to that stuff. And so I had this justifiable anger. And if you guys knew all the reasons why, you'd get on that bandwagon too. And I don't mean it like that, but I mean it. I don't mean it like that. You do understand what I'm saying? And I walked around with this resentment for a year. A year. It was gross, and there was restraining orders, and he couldn't come to my workplace, and my workplace people were like, yeah, Marion, that SOB, you know, and he couldn't come to my house, and he would drive by and try to be spooky and stuff like that, and that resentment was killing me. Like, it was killing me. And I had no idea, because I had a justifiable anger. And And when they talk about the dubious luxury of other men, I'm telling you, you know, there's some things in our life, like I can't afford that. You know, I think I've got God on my side. I think I've got this, and I think all this stuff. And I remember going to my home group, and he couldn't go to my home group either. And I came in the door one day, and I sat on the bench. We had these old church benches in Northwest Group. And I literally fell on that bench. I fell on that bench, and I said, I need to do some work. I have to start praying for him. And I'm telling you, do a little better than I did at 15 years of getting to the steps quicker. You know, we all have our stories and we all have our places of untreated. And some of my greatest heroes in Alcoholics Anonymous have gone untreated for a little bit, you know? And I knew that resentment had a power to kill me. I knew it did. And I went through the work again at that time. And I fell in love with our sick man's prayer. I fell in love with that through the process. And if you don't know it, it's on the bottom of 66 and 67. And these are some prayers I use alongside of going through the work again. And this was our course. We realized that people who had wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. And even in that line itself, you guys, the grouch and the brainstorms for us, the resentment has the power to kill. I don't care who that person is. When that change could happen for me, when that change could happen for me, that he was perhaps so spiritually sick, though we don't like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. That I was in the exact same category as this person. That he wasn't bad man, mean man, awful man, terrible man, I hate you man. He was just a sick man. He was just a sick man. They, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." Here's my favorite line in this. We can't be helpful to all people. Thank you. That's like, yes, freedom. You know, God, send him the people that he needs to have. Send him the people he needs to have. And so, you know, it wasn't my job. It wasn't my job to be the person to help fix him. And I tried. And there were times I tried in the middle of that process. Okay, now I need to build that bridge and make it okay. And it wasn't, and it never has been. And you know, through the process of this step, and I hope I'm staying enough on step four, but whatever, this is my fourth session and I'm behind the microphone. And the freedom that came from that, the freedom that came from being to set free, from going from sick man, from bad, awful man to sick man, was so, so freeing for me. And I can honestly tell you, through the process of this work, that last time, this time through the work, that God did something in me profound. He did something profound for me in that process. And I just learned so much about that. That whether, like, here's my deal with forgiveness. Here's how I view forgiveness. Like, it's just like anything that we do, that we can change anything about ourselves. My view on forgiveness, and this is my opinion, I believe that the only way I have the willingness to pray is because God gives me the willingness to pray. I have to have that from God. And I know for me that When I am granted forgiveness, I am granted forgiveness for somebody else. I don't have that power. I believe I don't have that power. When I receive the gift of forgiveness for myself, when I receive the gift of forgiveness for somebody else, I believe that that comes from God. I mean, I can say it out loud and I can say I forgive and I can walk that out and I can pray the prayers of forgiveness. But I can honestly tell you through the freedom of these steps that probably the biggest offender of my entire life, if he was president of the United States and had millions of dollars and everything good in his life, like, I have no attachment, you know? I have no attachment to that at all. When God set me free from that, that God put me in a place of neutrality, safe and protected from harm, safe and protected from my own heart and from my own place. You know, they used to say that, you know, when you have a good resentment and you nurse it and it's in your head, you know, what's the deal that like, you know, he's going to bed at night every night and with a big grin on his face, and I'm the one who's dying, you know, nursing that resentment and nursing that place. We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kind and tolerant view of each and every one. Okay, there's a couple more places I want to go. Perhaps there's a better way. Page 68. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world, Marion's in the world, to play the role that he assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. That's a pretty big line, to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending on our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear. Well, this is fear, but that's okay. I was afraid. At once we commence to outgrow fear. I'm going to wrap it up with this. We've begun to comprehend their futility with our resentments. We've begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We've commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. We've begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill towards all men, even our enemies, for we look at them as sick people. Thank you, God. We've listed the people we've hurt by our conduct, and we're willing to straighten out the past if we can. We hope you're convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you've already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you've made a good beginning. That being so, you've swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. For prideful, selfish, resentful, self-centered people, for us to be able to swallow the truth about ourselves, to set aside our pride. It says to pocket our pride. I think he knows our, you know, when it, that's going into step 5. But I think God knows we're never going to put away our pride completely, but to pocket it. And I love Bill's language in that when he goes into step 5. But that got a little emotional. Thanks for bearing with me, and I love you guys. Thanks.
Thank you, Marion. You were absolutely fantastic tonight. I don't even really know what to say to thank you because I'm still taken back with how good you are. I flipped that over. There's nothing on the back. And now it is time to introduce Mark for the Secretary's Report.
Good evening. My name is Mark. I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the Seven's tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going to go around. So while the basket people are going around, I've asked Mark to come up here and read the recovered statement. It's his last week in Florida. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and exactly what it means to be a recovered alcoholic.
I'm Mark, I'm alcoholic. Recovered, we are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
So 1940-style big book sponsorship from 4 to 2nd edition Alcoholics Anonymous of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried. 50% of them got sober and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses. And among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Okay. Anyone need a sponsor tonight? We got one. Would you stand up, please? So all you recovered alcoholics, please get with her after the meeting and get her back to God. We have some quick announcements. Broward County Intergroup, conveniently located in Broward County, Florida. It's basically your Home Depot for AA. Just replace 2x4s with big books. Volunteer opportunities. If anyone wants to get involved with volunteer work, there's some flyers on the back table. Broward County Institutions Committee, we missed the first meeting for the year, but February 9th will be the next one. If anyone wants to get involved with that, it's bringing meetings and institutions for people that can't get to them. AA's Got Talent, that one's coming up in a couple weeks, February 2nd, so make plans for that. Spring Fling with our chili cook-off and dinner. And then this is going to be held here June 21st and 22nd. It's Mickey and his wife Marie. We're flying them in from Colorado. It's an AA/Al-Anon dual series. It's going to be all weekend. It's a lot of fun. Alcoholics and God. That's us. Please join us Monday night for the Big Book study meeting where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30. Big Book study starts at 7:15. We have CDs, mugs, large prints, big books, little red books, and big book dictionaries for sale on that back table. One last announcement before we wrap up. Just a quick reminder, there's a 75-foot no smoking, no vaping zone in front of the doors. We have Boy Scouts here tonight. If you would, just please smoke down by that corner, out of view. We don't want to offend anyone. And we meet every Thursday, starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bell. See you next week.
Thank you, Mark. And thank you, Mark. Sorry, I just wanted to say that. Just so you know, we have tonight's session and all of the past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. also like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study. And to those that want to wish and thank Marian personally, please line up down this center aisle. And with that, we will close with the Lord's prayer. Our Father.
I am desperately in need of restoration. Can't get it right.
zan, zan, zan. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you're laughing, ba, 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 when you're laughing. Yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope the world smiles with you.
Shine, 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 let it shine. shine, let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine.
All right, Michael Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the... pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Fog is lifted, I see the light. Count my blessings when I go to sleep at night. And I dream now. Fear has left me and I'm standing tall. A pile of bricks now lies where once there stood a wall that I hid behind. For all this time. Sometimes it takes a burning bush or a great white light to set you right. Well, my eyes don't cry now, and I'm out to dry. Pity party's over, the guest of honor has arrived, and he's on my side. For the first time in my life, are green now, growing vines. They twist and turn each way, flowers blooming all the time outside my door. Like never before, I had to change everything to realize that today is the best day of my life. Broken man, I travel far and wide through the great divide, through his own heart, yeah. Well, I have a life today when it give away and it's just about to start. Brand new way, show up and plug in my guitar, and I play my songs, and people sing along, and stomp their feet and raise their arms, and here in this moment that we share, nothing could come in. Since when I go to sleep at night and I dream now. Yeah, I dream now. And everything's alright. Oh, man. Going on 10 years old, that song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.